around the world. Said Marcellus, so with you, brother. Islam is really a peaceful religion, isn't it?
Well, thank you very much. If you look at the word Islam itself, it has its deep root in peace and comfort. So these days, we know that peacekeeping is a very essential and important part of everybody's life. I mean, the whole humanity needs to take refuge to peacekeeping. Otherwise, the same skirmish that we can see around the world is happening.
That's right.
And unfortunately, conflict and fights, have taken over, to many parts of the world, even very small communities around the world. So unfortunately, some biased medias, are trying to instill this wrong idea that religious conflict is the root of all these problems around the world. And we know that it has become a very important issue these days.
Okay.
So the religion of Islam is very much interested and even is trying to disseminate this true ideology that peace and religion are together. So any religion who's trying to propagate conflict, discomfort and problems is not actually a true religion. So
that's right.
Islam is telling us that peacekeeping or keeping peace among all humanity is very essential and is necessary.
Okay, and there have been so many conversions to the religion of Islam because of the peace that it brings into the society and also at the individual mental level. You know, the people was converted. When you ask them, one of the reasons is this tranquility, calmness, and peace of mind that it brings to you. This is one individual aspect, but when you look at the societal, social, collective aspect, you can find also this kind of peace. Said Muslim, what's your comment on that, brother?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, first of all, we should know that that the religion has a strong influence on the people.
Yes.
In belief and in their faith. So, and we know that the people, they cannot live without having a belief or faith. Even the atheists do have a belief on which they obviously rely. Therefore, we see different religions in the world and we see people divided into different religions. But the Islam, as brother has said in its name, it has the word peace itself.
Yes.
And according to one meaning, we refer to the religion of peace. Therefore, Islam has a big contribution in order to make a peace. And obviously, it depends whether we follow the Islam in its true way or not. Because everything has two kinds of use. It can be used properly or it can be misused. So when we talk about the religion of Islam and its contribution towards the peace in the world, we can see that the Islam is the complete version of all the religions.
Okay.
And it has everything within it. And because it's the final religion, we can say like from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Yes.
Therefore, it also refers to the peace as well. And on top of that, we, the slogans even in the Quran and that are given by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, these are not general or general slogans. For example, when he talks about his prophet, he wants to introduce his prophet. He says he's Rahmatul Lil Alameen.
Yes.
He's the mercy for all the worlds. So the one who's mercy for all the worlds means that he is the bringer of peace to all the worlds, basically.
Right.
So when we talk about the worlds, obviously it's different states.
Okay.
So we can say like Islam has a big contribution if we really follow the true Islam.
That's right.
Because nowadays the problem is that the enemies are propagating against Islam and people do not know the real source of the Islam.
That's right. But say, Murtaza, there are still some doubts and questions regarding the misunderstanding out of the religion of Islam, because the extremist groups who are really the pioneers of showing a kind of violent, barbaric picture of Islam to the world, refer to the same text of the Holy Quran that calls Prophet Muhammad as Rahmatul Lil Alameen. But they understood it in this way to kill here and there, to commit suicide, and such, violent actions that are every day shown on the Western media, on the news, here and there. You can find, so many clips, video clips, the audios here and there. And that's why even some of the scholars of religions in the world at the universities believe that these violent things are based on the very text of the Quran and the context in which Islam was created. What's your answer to that?
Well, actually, let's look at the wrong misinterpretation of some verses of the Holy Quran. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, some people that you call them scholars, they have their own interpretations, which has no actually base and roots in Islamic principles and ideologies. And unfortunately, we have this idea that the religious leaders who have a very crucial role in bringing peace into communities, highly important to know, and it's really good to know that we all have a very important task to establish peace mm-hmm. among all communities. This part has been forgotten by these people that they are just by name scholars.
Okay.
And unfortunately, they are not very much involved in interpreting the true aspects of some verses of the Holy Quran.
Okay.
So these pictures that have been broadcasted around the world are just coming from those interpretations that are not true. So if, on the other hand, we have another downside of this issue, that many scholars do not get themselves involved in providing the true interpretation of those verses and give such information to those who are going to fight in order to bring peace, not to bring conflicts.
That's right.
So some fighting is not all about creating conflicts. People sometimes are dragged into fighting. I can call them not fight jihad because they want to bring peace. Unfortunately, this has not been interpreted correctly.
That's right. This interpretation of the verses of the Quran, and the thing is that they delete some part and they add some part to the verses of the Holy Quran. The context in which that verse was revealed is not known to them. And if you look at the history and how much the religion of Islam could help establishing peace among the families and the societies on the Arab Peninsula at the time of Prophet Muhammad, it would be really beautiful from the side of the scholars. But Sayyid Mohsen, still, as I said, there are some commentaries written on the verses of the Holy Quran and the incidents, especially after the demise of the Prophet Muhammad, about the wars that took place by the Muslim leaders and the kings here and there in different lands of the societies, show that maybe Islam was spread by sword and not words. What's your answer to that, brother?
Well, the problem started right after the demise of the Prophet.
Okay.
And for your previous and the recent question which you asked, for both of them, the answer is that the main root of this diversion and this extremism that which we see in today's world, it's because right after the demise of Prophet, there were some people who said, Hasbuna kitab Allah. The book of Allah is enough for us.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the book of Allah brings the overall or general rules, and the detailed rules and the details are in the life of the Prophet, in the narrations of the Prophet. So when they left the sunnah of the Prophet and the narrations of the Prophet, and they just attach, and they got the book only,
yes,
which they couldn't even understand, because the book of Allah, Quran, has in its verses, there are some hidden meanings.
Yes.
There are some clear wordings. There are some mutashabih, there are some similar,
yes,
things which are said. There are some clear,
the muhkamat, mutashabihat
have,
yes,
different meanings, obviously, as well. But obviously, there is nasikh and mansukh. There was a rule, and later by the Prophet,
yes,
it was overruled, and then the new rule,
right,
came. So when we look at the Quran, it has different aspects.
Mm-hmm.
In order to understand the Quran, we need to refer back to the history of the revelation.
That's right.
Why this verse was revealed,
okay,
upon the Prophet.
Yes.
Because of whom? What happened? Who did what? So that the Prophet has,
yes,
said this, or Allah has revealed the,
yes,
verses. So when they left all these things, these details, and they just got the book,
yes,
on its own without the teacher, without the explanation which was given by the Prophet,
yes,
we can see all those issues that happened into the Islam. And the picture today that,
yes,
we have, that Islam is spread by the sword,
yes,
this was never happened in the life of Prophet.
Yes.
Prophet never invaded any place.
Yes.
Rather, the battles which he had, it was in defense of Islam. He was defending the Muslims.
Yes.
And at that time, yes, it is true that it was out of the Medina. Why? Because at that time, whenever there used to be a battle, they used to go at a common place.
That's all right.
Which was in the middle of two countries or two places.
Okay.
So this was the reason, basically.
That's
so
right.
The main reason is when some people left the sayings of the Prophet, Ahlul Bayt, alayhimus salam, which were obviously,
yes,
Allah has also emphasized on this, and the Prophet also said, I'm leaving amongst you two things, the Quran and Ahlul Bayt. So when they just got the Quran and they left Ahlul Bayt, they left the sayings of the Prophet narrations, the explanations about the verses, that's what happens generally. And this wrong picture that today we have is because of leaving the explanations given by the Prophet.
And the Ahlul Bayt also as the true exegesis of the Holy Quran. But in the 21st century, still after 14 centuries, after the relation of the Holy Quran to Prophet Muhammad and Islam, how do you think, Sayyid Murtaza, Islam and its teachings, its true teachings, I would like to very much use this term, pure Muhammadan Islam's teachings, you know, can help international bodies like these different international bodies that are working for peace, you know. Whenever you look at the main slogans and the mottos of these organizations, you can find peace. How Islam can help them in today's world?
You know, let's look at this question from another point of view. So all religions, including the religion of Islam, to some extent came and it was descended to prophets to bring peace and bring nations together. So it is a duty we all have, and this has been bestowed upon us, that we must work very hard to teach and influence on each and every community on the earth in order to live and live a peaceful life and to be a follower of this peaceful life. So the religion of Islam has put a great emphasis on this aspect. And if you can see, wherever we have gatherings, meetings, the first thing that is been mentioned by the speakers and those leaders, especially religious leaders, is the unity.
Yes.
So when we talk about unity and the united nation, so it means that Islam is putting its greatest slogan and mottos on unity. So unity is not happening without understanding, without mutual understanding, especially about religious you know, matters.
That's right.
So the religion of Islam is focusing on similarities.
That's right.
The differences are not going to be given the first priority.
Okay.
So similarities bring people together.
Right.
So this aspect is the one that Islam has been propagated and has been talked about this matter over centuries.
That's all right. Especially as you said, reaching a kind of common ground among the Islamic leaders between themselves and also the leaders of the other religious communities and being united is a really important one. You know, the meetings that are happening today and the dialogue, both interfaith and intrafaith dialogues that are taking place and established in today's world show that all religious leaders are after making this peace in the world and not the conflict. But unfortunately, this media and the power of the media is showing it the way around.
And of course, you know that we need to work in order to build relationships.
Yes.
And relations of trust, you know, with other religions.
Yes.
And this is what Islam has been always doing, you know, over the past centuries. We had our infallible imams, Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. And on top of all, we have the Book of Islam, Quran, is telling us and its followers that a amicable relationship with other religions and with other followers of the other religions is really of a great importance.
That's all right.
So this shows that Islam has already said clearly that peace with and to other nations and anyone is very important.
That's all right. Said Mohsen, thank you very much, brothers, for your presence in the program. Viewpoints regarding how the religion of Islam can establish peace in today's world. It was very kind of you. And dear listeners, thank you very much for listening to this episode of the program Viewpoints. For more information, view our website at parstoday.com/Ian Call of Islam page. Also, our YouTube channel and Instagram page, Call of Islam Radio. Till another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Thank you so much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Viewpoints. You can log on to our website at parstoday.com, and you can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Until next time, goodbye. A symphony of nature.
in the limelight.
New research reveals lost rainforest resiliency imperils biodiversity, carbon storage, and the climate at a global scale. Stay with us for an article in this regard written by Brett Wilkins, journalist. This article is published under the heading Study Warns of Profound Consequences as Amazon Nears Tipping Point. Here's the story. The ability of the Amazon rainforest to recover from devastating droughts and wildfires has been declining over the past two decades, driving the crucial ecosystem to what authors of a study published recently called a critical transformation with profound consequences. The research published in the journal Nature Climate Change revealed that the world's largest rainforest has been losing resilience since the early 2000s, risking dieback, with profound implications for biodiversity, carbon storage, and climate change at a global scale as rainforests irreversibly transforms to savanna. Satellite imagery analyzed by the study's researchers revealed that over three-quarters of the Amazon is losing resilience. Chris Bolton, a climate scientist at the University of Exeter and co-author of the report, told Inside Climate News that resilience is defined as the ability of the Amazon rainforest to restore itself back to a stable state. According to the site, the study adds to a mounting pile of research projecting that the Amazon will reach a point when it rapidly converts into a different, drier ecosystem, although the timing of this tipping point remains uncertain and whether it will encompass the entire rainforest is also debated. The authors of the new study have said the change could come within decades. They were reluctant to be more specific, but said the tipping point could be sooner even than current models suggest. The core idea is if the system is heading toward a tipping point where by definition it's getting less stable, this means that before that happens, it gets slower recovering from all these perturbations, like the drought events that are happening year to year, said Tim Lenton, another University of Exeter climate scientist and study co-author. If it gets to that tipping point and we commit to losing the Amazon rainforest, then we get significant feedback to global climate change, he continued. We'd lose about 90 billion tons of carbon dioxide, mostly from the trees and some from the soil, and that's several years of emissions. Lenton added that such a development would have knock-on effects elsewhere in the world. The new study notes that deforestation and climate change by increasing dry season length and drought frequency may already have pushed the Amazon close to a critical threshold of rainforest dieback. Other factors, including rising atmospheric temperatures in response to anthropogenic greenhouse gas emissions, may additionally have negative effects on Amazon resilience, the publications added. According to The Guardian, areas closer to human destruction of the forest also became more unstable. Trees are crucial in producing rain, so failing them to clear land for beef and soy production creates a vicious circle of drier conditions and more tree loss. The good news, say researchers, is that the Amazon's tipping point has not yet been reached. Lenton said, so there is hope, who added that the new study's findings should encourage efforts to reverse deforestation and degradation of the Amazon to give it back some resilience against ongoing climate change. Under right-wing Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro, the self-proclaimed Captain Chainsaw, deforestation in the country containing approximately 60% of the Amazon rainforest has reached its highest levels in more than a decade. The Brazilian Amazon ecosystem, as well as the nearly million indigenous people from over 300 tribes who live there, are under increasing threat from developments including logging, mining, expansion of agricultural activity, and the construction of a major highway and dam. While the crisis is most pronounced in Brazil, it is also occurring in other Amazon nations and territories, including Peru, Colombia, Ecuador, Venezuela, Suriname, and French Guinea. Chris Jones, a climate researcher at the Met Office Hadley Center in Britain, who was not involved in the new study, told The Guardian that this research adds compelling evidence that climate change is a risk now and that these severe and irreversible impacts could become a reality. We have a narrow window of opportunity to take urgent action, he stressed.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
Aperture.
Iran is a country rich in culture, history, and art. The countless historical monuments scattered across the land are manifest proof of the glory of the ancient Persian civilization. And the development of modern-day Iran is evident in its major cities and metropolitan centers. But perhaps what's remained hidden from both foreign and domestic tourists are some of Iran's stunning natural treasures. I'm Daniel Arya. As the 18th largest country in the world, Iran offers a full gamut of climates and geographical attractions, from mountains and deserts to forests and caves. Iran's diverse and dramatic landscapes offer some truly awe-inspiring and unspoiled views to discover. In this week's program, we'll follow Javad Gharai, an Iranian nature explorer and documentary filmmaker, to the southern regions of Iran, where the hot sand dunes of the desert meet the turquoise and tranquil waters of the Sea of Oman. Stay with us.
Travel is the most important thing in life to me. The reason I travel so much to the unknown spots of my motherland is that I want to discover the hidden beauties of its environment and to meet its diverse ethnic groups. I believe that city dwellers, with all their knowledge, education, and modernity, must have a good relationship with the natural environment and with nature dwellers in order to live a richer, more peaceful life. A relationship like this is vital for our survival in the world we live in. It's early February. In this season, temperatures can plunge to minus 40 degrees in the towering Mount Damavand region. But I've come to a part of Iran where the temperature is as high as 20 degrees above, perfect for a good long trip in the winter. I'm Javad Gharai. I'm an Iran trotter, and this time I have traveled to the southernmost spot in my beloved country, Iran. Follow me to one of the most beautiful and pristine areas of my country, in the southern province of Sistan and Balochistan. To be exact, my destination is the southernmost area of the vast Balochistan region. In terms of culture and ethnic groups, Sistan and Balochistan province is divided into two parts: Sistan in the north and Balochistan in the south. During my many trips to the natural beauties of beloved Iran, I have come across multiple beautiful mountains and spent time traversing most of them, from freezing tall rocky mountains to forested highlands to those sitting on the hot and dry deserts of Iran. But this time, on one leg of my trip to Sistan and Balochistan province, I'm supposed to find mountains that are impossible to climb. The shape of these mountains, or should I say hills, is unique and beautiful. The locals and tourists who have visited this area have named these hills Martian Mountains. Many believe that the rocky formations in this part of Iran are very similar to those on the surface of planet Mars. Geological experts say these hills are sediments at the bottom of a sea that used to be here millions of years ago, were initially buried under millions of tons of soil following the change in the shape of the Earth's crust over the years, and were later unearthed as a result of climatic changes and monsoon rains that washed away the dirt, exposing the real face of these bizarre hills. These mountains are among the most beautiful in Iran, in my opinion. They are no less beautiful than Mount Damavand that's been registered as a national heritage. I hope the Martian mountains of Sistan and Balochistan province, of the Balochistan area in the Chabahar region to be exact, are also put on the national heritage list. The thrust of the Gulf of Oman oceanic crust under the southern area of Balochistan, in addition to wind and water erosions, are among the reasons behind the emergence of these beautiful elevations. They are made up of sedimentary rocks containing clay and lime. The beautiful furrows on their exterior have been carved out by centuries of erosion. The heights of Martian hills vary from one area to another. At their shortest, they stand at more than 5 meters tall, and at their highest, more than 100 meters. At first glance, these hills, referred to as badlands by geologists, may look like they are not very resistant, but you will change your mind once you inspect them up close, although they're not resistant enough against the rain and water of Balochistan. In the midst of these mountains is a plain where rainwater has accumulated over many years, creating a spectacular lagoon by the name of Lipar. Environmentally, Lipar, with its many and varied animal and plant species, is an important lagoon in the region. It is an important feature of the natural environment in Balochistan. The local population use water from the lagoon for their animals and in farming. I'm on my way to one of the most beautiful valleys in the Martian mountains. I've named it the Snail Valley. If you want to know why I picked that name for it, follow me. We walk for about an hour to get to the mouth of the valley. Floodwaters set off by seasonal rains have created a beautiful and unspoiled valley and cave. This is the Nahadi Cave. It acts as the entrance to the Snail Valley. My good friend here, Shir Muhammad, was kind enough to come here from Berries to help me find this cave and walk through it to the valley. I'm sure we are in for a treat. Am I right? The valley, I mean the Snail Valley, is a very long and deep gorge that leads to the Terap Mountain. Terap is what the locals call that mountain. The reason I named this the Snail Valley is because this place is littered with shell fossils. You can see them everywhere in this mountain and in this valley. Beautiful shell fossils that have adorned this boulder and this whole area. All the exterior walls of these Martian or miniature mountains and inside the Snail Valley is covered with these shells that have turned into fossil. Another reason is that this valley looks exactly like a snail. It meanders through the mountain from beginning to end. In some places, it wraps around itself and sends you going around in circles before you can get to the other end of it. The Snail Valley is so curvy. It's one of the most beautiful gorges in the Balochistan region. And let's not forget that if a place has a local name attached to it, we should never try and put a new name on it. We must follow the tradition of the locals who have inherited that name from their forefathers, from their ancestors. So once again, we should use the same names as they do. The gorge is almost impassable in some parts, but I am so enchanted by its beauty, I've decided to move as far as humanly possible. Its many twists and turns and the millions of fossils on its walls have redoubled my resolve to move forward. We are around 10 kilometers away from the Sea of Oman. This is a very high altitude. Obviously, thousands, in other words, millions of years ago, this whole area had been under the Sea of Oman, part of what used to be the Tethys Ocean. These fossil shells date back to that time. These are millions of years old. Every time I step into valleys or Martian hills like these, I'm filled with utter joy. But I'd never take any of these back home with me or use them as ornaments. All I do is pick them up, snap photos of them, and put them back where I found them, to share all these beauties with posterity. We must protect these treasures. We are their guardians. We walk a long way and eventually arrive at a dead end. That's when we have to trace our way back. Fortunately, there are no construction operations going on anywhere close to the Martian mountains, and that adds to the beauty and magnificence of the area. After my visit to the Martian hills, I continue my journey to one of the most beautiful semi-traditional wharfs in Iran, the Berries Fisherman's Wharf. It is operated by the inhabitants of Berries village, perched on top of these escarpments. Before the village was relocated to the top of the coastal cliffs, it used to be somewhere on the sand beach. Today, the locals call it Old Berries. The villagers moved from Old Berries to New Berries around 20 years ago. One of the most important reasons for their relocation was the strong winds in the area that would blow for 120 days in a row and dump sand and dust on the village. The second reason was the beautiful Berry's Wharf. The architecture used in the homes and other buildings in Baluchistan has vividly been inspired by Indian and Pakistani architectural designs. They use different, beautiful, vibrant colors in their buildings. The old mosque here is located in the area where old Berry's used to be. The rest of the village lies in ruins. They stripped the old buildings of their doors and windows and used them in their buildings in new Berry's. But they have left this mosque intact. Everything in this mosque is there, just as it has always been. That's because the Muslim population in Baluchistan have utmost respect for their mosques and sacred buildings. They never demolish them. They abandon such buildings and let nature take its course. The main occupation of the people of Berry's is fishing. The men of this land depend on the sea for their livelihood. Some strike out to the sea in small boats and throw their small nets in to catch fish. Others go out in wooden launches, which could be called the biggest of man-made contraptions. They go out to sea and spend months fishing. These large wooden motorboats are equipped with proper refrigerators and air conditioning for the crew. The fishermen here say they are not happy with their catches in recent years. They say marine life populations have shrunk drastically. The declining numbers of fish in seas and oceans has its cause in different and important reasons. The first reason behind the decrease in the numbers of marine life around the world is the boom in the human population on Earth. The growth in the human population has led to a larger demand for fish and in turn to overfishing by those in the fishing industry. Operations that are carried out via large ocean-going trawlers fitted with radars and other high-tech equipment. Ships that have nets running several kilometers and by means of radars can trap thousands of fish in every attempt in the depths of oceans. In almost every catch, these ships bring home fish weighing upwards of 300,000 kilos altogether. Industrial fishing and the overconsumption of marine life by humans leaves the fish no time to reproduce, pushing many species to the brink of extinction. In a recent survey, researchers at the University of British Columbia found that in half a century, human consumption has pushed down big fish populations by 90%, fish that are in high demand on the market. They have predicted that if serious action is not taken against overfishing by developed countries, all these species of fish will have gone extinct by 2050. Marine life populations are on the decline, which will have dire consequences for humans and the environment alike. The ecosystems of seas and oceans are intertwined with the lives of humans and the environment they live in. They're all very fragile. Iran accounts for only a small portion of the marine life caught around the world. The reasons being high prices, the small share the marine animals have of the Iranian diet, and the absence of advanced fishing vessels in the country. But European countries, the United States, Japan, and many other developed countries play an important role in the destruction of marine ecosystems. They have done more damage to the environment than any other country in the world. And this is a result of a boom in their populations, a change in consumption patterns, and the lifestyle of the people living in those countries. There are two other important reasons that have contributed to the dwindling numbers of marine animals: contamination and global warming. Berris is a very beautiful wharf. It was built at the foot of the Berris Cliffs, offering a spectacular view. Launches and boats return here with their catch of the day to sell their prized sea creatures to the middleman. Beautiful this fellow is. The local fishermen here call it the kilkita in their local dialect. It's so colorful. Unfortunately, she too is still carrying her eggs. They get caught in the fisherman's net in this season. Most of those I've seen were ready to spawn. This is their time to reproduce, but they don't get the chance to do it. They are pulled out of the water along with the thousands of eggs that they are carrying in their abdomens. Poor thing is struggling to get out of my hand. Just look how beautiful it is. So colorful. One of the fishermen gave me this lobster and said I could have it, but I'm gonna let it go because it's carrying so many eggs. After my visit to Berris Wharf, I set off on a walking journey along the shores of the Sea of Oman. Of course, I'll be walking on the cliffs all along. The view from atop the cliffs in Berris is simply matchless. Fortunately, there aren't constructions of any kind up here. The area is an asset for Balochistan and indeed for Iran because of its pristineness. I hope to see the same unspoiled beauties and pristineness the next time I visit this part of my country and its beautiful landscape. I hope more and more tourists come to visit Balochistan. Nature travelers go to places that are pristine and untouched in order to immerse themselves in the peace and quiet that those places offer. Beautiful rocky cliffs are where Berris begins. Those are the shores of Berris, among the most beautiful of our beloved country, Iran. But the bluff along the shore is crumbling into the sea. The waves lap at the walls made up of millennia-old sediments that settled on the bottom of the Sea of Oman that used to cover this whole area. The bluff is capped by a 2-meter-high layer of rock, like the one I'm sitting on right now. It feels like reinforced mortar with all the shells and algae in it, fossils that have been here for thousands, or should I say millions of years. But the layers underneath are weak and brittle, allowing the waves to chip away at them one bit at a time. The green blocks or rocks that you see on the coast are in fact the top layer of the cliff. They used to be up where I am right now. It's going to take the waves some time to turn them into sand and dissolve them in the water. It's about 60 meters down to the foot of the cliff, and a huge slice of the cliff has splintered from the rest, or should I say from Berris territory.
Cultural news. Social news. Scientific news. Artistic news. With delight.
Races, beauty contests, and a marvelous show. Here is everything you need to know about the first Qatar Camel Festival. Qatar kicked off its very first edition of the Camel Festival earlier this month at Lepsair, Doha. The festival features unique and high-value breeds for the public to enjoy. Camels from all around the region will also get to flaunt their posture to earn the title of the most beautiful camel or the highest value breed in the festival. But first, the whole lot should be judged.
Judging is based on the size of the camel's head, the length of the neck and the beautiful appearance of the animal and its health status. Of course, judging is different for each group of camels. For example, in the case of camels that are black, the focus is on the size of the animal's head. But on camels that are white, the focus is on the beauty of the camel and the harmony of the body and the beauty of the animal. In addition, we have very experienced professional staff who will deal with the animal if it is artificially beautified.
To spike excitement and competitiveness in those who enjoy such shows, the country has allocated a whopping 47 million Qatari riyals for the lucky winners. The 45-day event will last until March 22nd and will include various competitions, including 115 local and international races.
In the streets of the Chadian capital city, an actor is bringing culture to impoverished neighborhoods by organizing readings of poetry and plays.
Culture should be accessible to all. If we want to have a wonderful world, a harmonious world, everyone should be focused on the same dimensions to be able to dream together. And without culture, we don't be able to initiate development. And to initiate this stage of development, we need to invite people to think together.
The actor does not have a fixed place to tell his stories. He performs in public spaces and says it is his way of giving everyone the opportunity to discover and explore creativity. Among the activities Bonaventure organizes, one can name drawing with children and conducting acting classes. He believes music and theater bring other disciplines together, creating an avenue for enriching human connections. Residents, especially the children of the impoverished neighborhood, say they always look forward to Bonaventure's arrival. A first-of-its-kind selfie museum in the Central American country of Guatemala is gaining lots of attention from excited enthusiasts. The selfie museum is located in Antigua, Guatemala, and is made up of 40 rooms or scenarios. Each room is a recreation of a colorful theme. Wallpaper, wings, greenery, neon signs, and other props are all present to spark the interest of visitors. One room includes a levitating bed, and another is equipped with a spaceship. Other rooms have familiar scenarios of presidential offices and comic book characters for visitors to take photographs in. Several artists participated in creating the art illustrations. A zoo in Peru's capital city, Lima, is celebrating a rare hatching of endangered baby crocodiles. The Huachipa Zoo showcased three females and one male to the public on the World Wildlife Day. The four crocodiles were born in incubators as part of the conservation efforts for the reptile. This species is an American crocodile, which is on the endangered list of animals in Peru. Zookeepers say the black market and threats on their habitat
habitat have seen the crocodile population dwindle. The zoo regularly receives animals that were rescued from trafficking. Among those traits are tortoises, macaws, and monkeys.
The 2022 World Cup is reaching a fever pitch as hundreds of people line up at a shopping center in Qatar to take a picture with a trophy. The famous Golden World Cup trophy was unveiled during a ceremony at a mall in Doha, where excited football fans waited for their turn to see it. They were also given the option to take a selfie or have their photo taken professionally. While the competition is still nearly a year away, FIFA says more than a million tickets were requested within the first 24 hours after sales opened. The highest demand came from fans from Qatar, followed by Argentina, Mexico, and the United States, among others. Bangladesh is reviving the ancient tradition of producing a historically renowned fine hand-woven fabric called muslin. With the help of the government, the trade is making a comeback. Now, a workshop has been set up in Dhaka where weavers are being trained in the ancient art. They say it took them months to master the craft, working with incredibly fine hand-spun cotton yarns. The weavers say it takes them 8 hours to spin just 4 centimeters. Some varieties of the fabric are so fine that an entire muslin sari could fit inside a single matchbox.
There was a myth about muslin that it was so delicate that it would pass through even a small ring. Look, it's true. There is space to squeeze in another piece of cloth through this ring as well.
Breathing life back into this ancient trade was not easy. Officials with a revival project say there was little knowledge about how this fabric was made. Plus, the rare cotton variant, which makes this fabric so expensive, was also lost. The precious fabric was the most extravagant of its era and popular in Mughal courts. It was also imported into Europe for much of the 17th century and transformed the style of the aristocracy there.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world. An art gallery in London, Tate Modern, is hosting an exhibition with a remarkable span of surrealist works. The exhibition, dubbed Surrealism Beyond Borders, features more than 170 artworks ranging from paintings and sculptures to photography and films. Works by more than 150 artists from over 60 years are on the display. The exhibit also has a wide geographical span and includes surrealist artworks from different countries. Some of the most prominent artists whose works are being exhibited include Pablo Picasso, Salvador Dali, and Ted Jones. The exhibition will run until August 9th. Impressive, creative, wonderful. That's how visitors describe the works of Vincent Hoch, a Dutch post-impressionist painter being displayed in an impressive art exhibition in the Argentine capital. Hundreds of Van Hoch's paintings are projected onto the walls of the gallery. The image bloom and ripple in front of the audience, creating a 3D-like and immersive experience. Van Gogh was one of the most famous and influential figures in Western art history of the 19th century. He is largely remembered for his impressionist style, a break from the old traditional art technique. He is also famous for his turbulent life, which was made for outlandish, emotionally charged paintings.
Persian language takes center stage in a conference in Tehran dubbed Promotion of Persian Language on Global Scale. The event seeks to preserve the ancient language through teaching it to non-Iranians. Yusuf Jalali has more.
Iran Imruz.
Persian language has been spoken for 3 millennia, but like every cultural heritage, it needs to be preserved. This is according to officials from Iran's Ministry of Foreign Affairs, who sat with Persian language activists to discuss ways to promote Persian through teaching it to non-Iranians.
Today is actually the Persian language day for me and for many of my colleagues. So if you allow me, I would like to continue in Farsi.
Thank you for this opportunity. The identity of a nation is a set of shared beliefs, shared culture and history, and all of these issues are reflected in the language that each nation speaks. So today, all of those who have a role in the promotion of Persian language gathered to exchange views on the preservation of Persian, and we at the Foreign Ministry will facilitate any effort made in this regard.
1,000 years ago, Iran had a poet named Ferdowsi whose poems are still popular and understood by our generation. This is significant and shows that Persian is an old language that has stayed intact through the centuries.
Saadi Foundation is the leading entity in the promotion of Persian language. Every year, the Institute, together with the Islamic Culture and Relations Organization, holds a number of Persian refresher courses in and outside Iran for non-Persian speakers. Recently, the Institute has launched online courses and published self-study books for Persian language enthusiasts.
By launching the online Persian training platforms, we saw a sudden increase in the number of applicants from different countries. This is because many of those who are interested in learning Persian gained an instant access to Persian teaching contents. At the same time, we continue to launch in-person courses organized by Iran's cultural attaches and hosted by Iranian overseas schools.
Persian comes from the Indo-European family of languages. The earliest versions of Persian date back to roughly 2,500 years ago, during the Achaemenid dynasty. Today, it is spoken by more than 300 million people in the world, and different dialects, including Dari and Pashto, in countries such as Iran, Afghanistan, and Tajikistan. Besides its significant impact on science, medicine, and astronomy, Persian has its own prominent place in literature and poetry. Khayyam, Rumi, Sa'di, and Hafez are only a few examples of world-renowned Persian poets. Language is the identity of a nation, and through the centuries of its spoken and written history, Persian has grown to become the narrator of Iran's rich past and its ancient civilization. Now, as learning a language is learning a culture, experts here say promoting Persian on a global scale is translated into introducing Iran and its culture to the world. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Students and staff gather for sizzling meat sandwiches as they signal their orders with their hands at a food truck in Pakistan's capital city of Islamabad. The Abbe Cow is no ordinary food truck parked on the campus of the Millennium Universal College. It's fully managed and run by staff with hearing impairments. At the beginning of the queue, a diagram shows simple phrases in sign language which customers use to order their food and communicate. The food truck is Pakistan's first mobile restaurant entirely staffed by deaf workers, providing an economic opportunity for them.
Having the startup here at our campus has been really fruitful. Not only have we created more awareness around the sign language amongst our students, but we've also created an inspiration for TMUC students to look up and pursue entrepreneurship as a career choice.
The project developer, Aisha Raza, says the majority of deaf youth end up unemployed and face inequality and discrimination. She says she wanted to create an opportunity for her brothers to economically thrive. The goal is to bridge communication gaps between the deaf and hearing communities and help remove language barriers. The food truck is the brainchild of a family where both parents and their sons are either totally or partially deaf.
www.parstoday.com/en